It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly. And today we are discussing relocation in both the private and public sector. And we have some folks with us, some experts actually, who have been involved in this issue for quite a while. We've got Peggy Smith from Worldwide ERC, that's Employee Relocation Center, and Linda Rothleder from Rothleder & Associates joining us. Thank you for being here, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And wanted to give everybody a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And as I mentioned, relocation. Both of you have different backgrounds. We've got really a federal public sector background and a private sector. And Peggy, why don't you start off and give us a little information about yourself and Worldwide ERC and how you got involved in relocation.
You bet. Thanks, Jennifer. And again, I'm delighted and honored to be here and share this hour along with my dear friend and colleague, Linda, here. But so, it's kind of funny. I was yesterday speaking in Charlotte, and we had this loose joke amongst the attendees at the event there around how did we get into this industry? And for us and for many people, you happen to fall into it. And so in my specific scenario, I started my relocation side, or mobility is what we would call it, side at Microsoft. And I was in a different business unit entirely. I was actually in our OEM operations business unit. Microsoft had made the determination to move the business unit, and I did not want to go. So long story short, I was interviewing internally. One of the beauties of working for a company like that, there was typically anywhere from 3,500 to 5,000 jobs available to look at. And so I went and I met with a hiring manager over in the travel business unit, and she said, I talked to her on a Friday. I talked to her about taking an APAC travel manager position. And on Monday, she called me back and she said, hey, you know what? On Friday afternoon, they gave me relocation. What do you think about doing that? And I said, well, you know what?
Why not?
Yeah. I said, well, I've moved twice. That must make me qualified to do this. And as they say, the rest is history. And that was in 1999.
That's great. All right. And what about, so you got involved in that. And tell us a little bit about Worldwide ERC, because that's certainly different than Microsoft.
Absolutely. And so, Worldwide ERC is the Workforce Mobility Association. So we are a global association that supports the mobility needs of employers and the service providers that support that on a global basis. In fact, we're celebrating 50 years, just like the
really?
Beatles landing in New York. Yay, we're celebrating 50 years. We started in Chicago and then largely was built on the foundation of real estate, the transactions. Okay. You know, most everybody in those days had a home, and that was the lion's share of our membership. And we moved to Washington, D.C., and, like I said, we're global. We are opening an office in China. We'll be a wholly owned foreign entity there. We've done business in Europe, and then we're going to be launching into Latin America later in September. Okay. So it's a very exciting association just over here in Arlington, Virginia.
Makes sense. I mean, as companies become more global, you've really got to move your focus.
You
got
to do it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. So, well, welcome. And Linda, you've got a little bit of a different background coming into it from both a federal and, I guess, some of the military side, too. You've looked at both sides of relocation.
Yes. Thank you, Jenny. I'm delighted to be here. And Peggy, it's wonderful to be here with you. Yes, I kind of fell into relocation as well.
Seems to be the story.
But back in the mid-1980s, actually, I was in graduate school working on the Federal Employee Alternative Work Schedule Act. It was during the years when they were reauthorizing flex time and got involved with an organization called Federally Employed Women, who wanted to use my master's research to testify in front of Congress for the reauthorization.
That's great.
And during those months, I met Jerry Shaw of the Senior Executive Association. who was working on other pay employee pay and benefit issues. Yep. And starting an organization called Public Employees Roundtable. So I went from Federally Employed Women to Public Employees Roundtable. And it was during that centennial year of the Career Civil Service when the law was passed that started the relocation marketplace for federal employees. So we're talking the late 1983-84 timeframe.
Yeah, which I think people don't realize that's when that law dates back to, is that, you know, and that it wasn't something that was always there.
No.
Also.
No. We have had direct reimbursement since, and the research that I've done goes back to the 1940s.
Okay.
For federal employees, but no, 1983 was the beginning of the relocation market.
Right. Well, and I think that's actually a good place to start, is since a lot of our listeners are federal employees themselves, what is the law on relocation? I mean, there, you know, it's changed a little bit over the years, but federal employees, by and large, are relocated. Depends on, especially if you're in law enforcement. I mean, I grew up, my dad was a career DEA agent, so we moved every 2 to 3 years. So I grew up living federal relocation in a lot of respects. But you know, I think some people don't think about moving and being relocated. And so, Linda, why don't you tell us a little bit about what that law was that passed in 1983 and sort of what brought that on? Because it was similar conditions to today a little bit, or at least a couple years ago when we were in recession again.
Exactly. 1983 was a time when we were in a pretty good recession. A pretty good recession is not the right term.
There's not a good recession.
No, there's not a good recession. It was a solid, it was a painful recession. There were senior executives from some agencies, particularly who lived in the Northeast, who couldn't afford to have a house in Boston and a house in Washington, D.C. But senior executives need to move. Mm-hmm. They have mandatory mobility. And they couldn't afford to do this. And so they were going to their agencies, help, we need help, we need help, we need help. And it was because of them and their problems and their issues that the law was passed, which basically introduced for the first time a guaranteed home sale program as a safety net for employees who move for the good of the government into the federal travel regulation, because the federal travel regulation houses the authority, the legislation, right, for federal employees that move. So you have a direct reimbursement program and you have your relocation management contracts.
Right. And so by guaranteed home sales, and that's what, you know, I recall that growing up, is that we would virtually sell our house to the government, so to speak, or to a company that was contracted with the government. They would take on that burden, if you want to call it, depending on how the housing market was. And then we were free to move as the government then dealt with, or that company dealt with, actually making the transaction on the house versus
exactly
giving somebody a check and saying, here you go, direct reimbursement.
So. Exactly. The government itself cannot take possession of the real
right
estate. And so the way the law was written was that companies, relocation management companies, all of whom are members of Worldwide Employee Relocation Council, would be now, could compete for these contracts. And they could go to the agencies, and when the agencies put out a bid, and say, yes, I can help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to help you with that. And so they do appraisals, fair market value, and they provide an offer to the employee, and they help the employee market the homes. The program has grown over the years, where it's not just home sale. Now, lots of programs are bundled. You have household goods, move management services, destination area services, rental programs have become very popular since the current recession, the recent recession.
Right.
And pre-decision programs, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit more, that are very interesting and important in today's world.
Right. Well, and I think that's something, Peggy, you mentioned, all of these different types of people are part of Worldwide ERC or can be part of it. And I think people forget that relocation isn't just a moving truck showing up to your house, or it's not just you selling your house one place another. There's a whole bunch of different types of providers. And are each of those, Linda mentioned a couple, household goods, rentals, are they all members of Worldwide ERC, or is it?
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, we take a look at the act of the mobility in a holistic capacity. Okay. And so that's absolutely an important part, is that logistical components that you're talking about, which is our bread and butter. One of the things that we're recognizing, though, that's being driven largely by what's happening in the HR space, and I know we'll come back to that, or the demands on CEOs, I should say, is that that pie is expanding. And so the purest space of somebody in a corporation being exclusively dedicated to the mobility function is really becoming less and less. And so we're actually focusing, in fact, it's one of our four strategic goals, is to engage a larger percentage of our talent mobility community. And so what that might look like is going to be, in addition to your core bread and butter, the lines that Linda mentioned, we're actually now looking at different lines. For example, staffing organizations or immigration firms. Think in terms of global healthcare, global pension, those kinds of things that historically were not part of the core bread and butter, but we're recognizing in this ever mobile world, you've got to pull them in. And, you know, we need to educate them on the nuances of the act of mobility. And likewise, they need to educate us on some of the things that they're experts in.
Right. And this is really, that's an interesting point, is that the world has changed since the 40s, when people, it really was sort of a single transaction of you moving. Right. And now with this global world comes a lot of problems and or challenges, maybe in a good way, too, opportunities. Mm-hmm. So want to take our first break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about this human resources strategy, I think, that's really becoming part of this. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been talking about relocation in the private and public sector. And when we just left, we were talking a little bit about the changing nature of relocation, especially in a global environment in some respects. And that's not just private sector. That's, you know, federal employees as well. The federal government, even state and local, are moving to a more both national and global environment in a lot of ways. And people are coming across some different challenges in that way. And I think this is a good time to take a little bit of a step back and look at what are the differences, because that's always fascinating to me, is how the private sector views relocation and how those programs work versus how it works in the private sector, in the public sector. I mean, the federal government handles relocation in a far different way in some respects than they would at, say, Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting thing. And what I hear from you, Peggy, is that it really is this little bit broader, not just a procurement function or not just a maybe HR, but you really do bring in different sectors of your business and you look at how and why am I moving people. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think the current sort of buzz, or the things that are underway now, and this has been going on for a few years, but it's getting a lot more energy. And that has to do with, as companies look at their results and what they need to achieve, you know, there's some great research that's been done by a number of firms. And one of the firms, Manpower as an example, does a talent shortage survey. And over the last several years, directionally, CEOs who have responded to their survey have indicated in the, you know, 33, 34, 35% of them have difficulty filling positions. Okay. So if you start with that basis of where is the human capital, where are their business challenges, and largely in that industry was called the war for talent, right? Yep. And so what's happened, though, evolutionary, I think, in the last 12 months is companies have now said, you know what, we can sit back and look at this war for talent, or we can take an active role in helping solve it. So what you're beginning to see is organizations looking at creating more of a corporate talent system. And in that talent system, they're looking at all the disparate components of HR. So, for example, where you might have had, you know, your applicant tracking system was housed in one area, but it didn't talk to your performance management system and you didn't tie it to comp and benefits. Now they're looking at creating a holistic ecosystem. And what it does is it sets a framework so that organizations can begin to then align their people strategies to their business objectives. So if you need to double the revenue or expand into a certain geography or open a new plant or whatever it is that you need to do, you then invite HR into that business discussion so that you can ensure you're going to have the talent there for the objectives that you need to accomplish that way. Now, if I take one other slice of that, Jennifer, for a second, and that is to say the really sophisticated organizations are then saying mobility, the act of moving somebody either within an organization or, you know, across a border, whatever you want to call it, they're beginning to look at it and say, I can have that also be a strategic lever in helping achieve business objectives. So you're seeing a real change in the way that CEOs, which is absolutely fantastic, are viewing the HR function and the skills necessary to have them help achieve business objectives. And mobility is just a natural part of that whole ecosystem.
Absolutely. It's this idea that people are a big resource in helping you get your bottom line.
You got it.
So you need the right people in the right place
at the right time.
Exactly. You know, and it's funny because I hear, you know, some of the lingo that you're using, if you want to call it that, talent management, war for talent, these sorts of things. And I don't always hear that in the government, and maybe that's me, you know, in terms of that. But I don't think that's necessarily in the holistic view of how agencies have maybe traditionally moved people. I mean, it depends. Certain ones, certainly there's been, you know, this idea, but it seems like it's a procurement function, not necessarily an HR function, or maybe they're not, the sides aren't talking in that same holistic way.
I would say you're absolutely right, Jen. Peggy, it would be wonderful, as those goals, the federal government should strive for those goals, mm-hmm, the agencies.
Absolutely.
But what we are seeing currently is still that relocation is handled in the finance division.
Mm-hmm.
It's handled by a very small staff. And what that staff does is examine vouchers and or manage the relocation contracts. With the current environment, the hiring freezes, the staff shortages, those staffs continue to shrink and shrink and shrink. And right now, some of the agencies are actually talking to their relocation partners, the companies that partner with the agencies who hold the contracts, and saying, hey, we need staff. Can we outsource this function to you? Can you be adjunct staff? So those questions are being examined now. And there are some instances where, you know, agencies have at least looked and taken those logistical parts of the move, expense management and household goods and real estate, temporary lodging, and they've combined them all at least into one process and have said to their contractor, here, will you manage this entire process for us, which is a big step forward.
Right.
But getting the human capital, the human resource people involved in the government, I'm not seeing it yet. I think we should see it soon, because everything I've read recently that's been published by OPM, GAO, the Human Capital Officers, Senior Executives Association, the public unions, they all agree that the current economic environment, you know, is inadequate to staff. It's has limited training and development for federal employees. The furloughs are impossible to deal with. There's hiring freezes. There's pay freezes. There's slashed overtime. And this is all leading to more and more retirement. We hear and we read that 30% of the force, yep, is eligible for retirement over the next 3 years.
Yeah, it's a big number. I mean, if you had all those people walk out the door.
Mm-hmm. So implementing a strategy that Peggy was talking about, an agency mm-hmm. who will step forward and say, I want to integrate, you know, talent management with my human capital strategy and put it all together, I think is going to become crucial in the next 3 to 5 years.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people forget that people do move in the federal government. I mean, we did mention that senior executives have, you know, subject to mandatory geographic reassignment, depending on how often it happens. Law enforcement officers, they move quite a bit. Sometimes within civilian DOD, they're moving to different bases, depending on if bases are closed. It's a fairly big industry. Do you know approximately how many? I mean, I think I saw somewhere back, at least on monetary level, back in the mid-2000s, it's a $800 million a year industry in the federal government, that's how much the government pays on average. It's not two or three people that are moving.
No, quite a few. No, there's tens of thousands of people who are actually moving. You have many, many agencies with mandatory mobility. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means that if you're a law enforcement, a DEA agent, you're going to be moving every two to 3 years. You sign on the dotted line. That's part of my career. When the recession hit, you know, the agency had to be flexible and responsive because these employees, you know, had homes that were, mm-hmm. you know, they couldn't afford, they couldn't be resold. The mortgage money had totally dried up. And it was, for a few years, a really bad situation. Right. We seem to be more back on track now.
Yeah, as the market has eased up a little bit.
And we're hoping it continues to improve and becomes more stable. But you have to have programs in place to handle the good times as well as the bad times.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's an interesting difference in some ways between the public and private sector, is that private sector companies tend to view these as programs that they always have in place mm-hmm. and sort of are willing to move, tweak them a little bit faster. And I think mm-hmm. with the recession, that was something that was really different, is that agencies weren't as able to or flexible enough to make those changes with the way their programs were set up. Is that what you saw, Linda, in the last several years when we were really in deep with the recession?
Right. About 65% of the federal agencies contract through the General Services Federal Supply Schedule. 48 is the number of the supply schedule. And the GSA has done a remarkable job of putting together what they call their Employee Relocation Resource Center. And that center brings together the suppliers, the industry, and the agencies in a forum where they can talk openly and deal with problems. One of the responses that the GSA came up with at the beginning of the recession was to allow for the first time companies to service mortgages rather than to pay off mortgages, because paying off mortgages is critical to federal employees because of security clearance.
Right. I think people don't realize you could lose your security clearance if you're having mortgage issues.
If you have a credit problem,
right?
You could easily be downgraded and or lose. Mm-hmm. So they allowed servicing of mortgages, which was an innovation. They put in good policy drivers on the real estate side, managed what they call managed programs. And this said, you know, you to the employees, you will use your company's broker network. There will be a listing cap, a price within 105%. There'll be a delayed appraisal process. There'll be mandatory marketing time. So these managed programs came in at the very beginning of the recession, and they definitely helped the agencies and the companies who were the partners survive the recession.
Right, because it's certainly a big burden, if you want to say, or a challenge for companies who are also working with the government or working with businesses to make sure they can manage all of this business. So I think that's something. Now, was there a challenge in the private sector as well on the mobility side with the recession, or was that not quite as big of an issue?
No, I think it was. I'll draw back a couple of comparatives, though, for our listeners, because I think they're really interesting and distinct differences between two programs, and Jennifer will come back to that, which is that the term mandatory mobility is virtually unheard of. You just wouldn't hear of that at all in the private sector.
Right.
It's a completely different thing, coupled with when you talked about the policy components or the suite of benefits you're going to offer an employee. We like to say, and in our industry, is that on the corporate side, the private sector side, that you should be looking at your policy on an annual basis. You should absolutely be looking at that, because there are things that change annually, whatever they are, and I go back to either the war for talent or the macro economy or whatever your business objectives are. And one great lever, and I'll harken back to my days at Microsoft, that we always did is we had policy utilization rates and policy exception rates. And so if you were going to make an exception to the number of days of their temp housing or whatever it might be, those were great indicators of, was this an anomaly or did you need to make a policy adjustment year over year? And so when you ask the question, you know, Jennifer, when the economic recession hit and, you know, how did it affect in the private sector? Everybody categorically will tell you overnight their volumes dropped by 50%.
Right.
Right. And so you had that, number one, that occurred. And then the second part that occurred is that, quite simply, people couldn't sell their homes. Mm-hmm. And there were some beefing up, if you will, of paying for loss on sales. The private sector, by the way, for the most part, does no longer buys homes. And that's another distinct difference. You know, they stopped that. There are still some major blue chip firms that do that, but for the most part, no, they don't do that. But they did have, in the early years, a really robust loss on sale. Now, as that went on and you couldn't see the end of this, companies said, oh, no, we can't be doing that. But what we have seen is a return, and we'll talk more about that, I think, when we come back.
Absolutely. And that's what I do want to talk about, is a little bit of the actual technical differences between how you manage a mobility relocation in public and private. And we're going to stop here for our mid-show break. We'll continue with our discussion after this break. And a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
You're welcome back. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and we've got Peggy Smith from Worldwide ERC and Linda Rothleder from Rothleder Associates joining us. And we've been talking about relocation. And when we left, we were talking a little bit. We started getting into some of the technical aspects of relocation, because they really are done in different ways. And I think people often, even those who are going through the move, don't realize what their options are, what types of assistance is available to them, how moves are actually accomplished. And I think they're done differently a little bit in the public and private sector. And I think there are probably differences within each of different types. I know we've talked a little bit about guaranteed home sales, but Linda, what are the ways that somebody could be relocated? There are different ways they can sell their house. There's direct reimbursement. There's...
Yes. Well, in the federal program, there are two programs, really. I mean, you've got direct reimbursement plus tax gross up. And right. the tax gross up came into being in the 1983 legislation as well. So direct reimbursement plus tax gross up, that means you have a self-managed move.
So you will, find the buyer,
you do everything yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You do all of your research. You sell your real estate. You get reimbursed a certain percentage of the sale costs.
But it may not cover the whole thing.
A certain percentage of the purchase costs in the new location.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It may not cover everything. You know, you get reimbursed for your temporary lodging and
right.
subsistence and those types of things. But as far as real estate goes, and you do get reimbursed if you're a renter, a little bit for breaking, for lease negotiations, but it may not cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
The relocation management contracts are also in the Federal Travel Regulation. They are the other program that's authorized. And those programs provide the agencies who use them with professional staff who will counsel the employees, who will help the employees with all those nuances. And within those programs, you can have a guaranteed offer, a guaranteed home sale program,
mm-hmm.
which can consist of a full buyout, which is that expensive element that we've been talking about,
right.
where you do two appraisals and you offer to purchase the employee's home at fair market value. There's also less expensive options, like the buyer value option and the amended value sale.
What are those?
A buyer value option is one where you're during the marketing period, the employee says, hey, I have a buyer. The appraisal process hasn't started yet. The inspection process hasn't started. I have a buyer. The call their relocation company. The company will turn around very quickly and vet, you know, is it a good offer? Is it a bona fide offer? And if indeed it is, then the transaction will go through. It'll be between the relocation company and the new buyer. An amended value sale is similar, except the buyer comes in before the appraised value, during the appraisal process.
Right.
So you've got all of that, but the company doesn't have to buy it because a buyer has come in, and that buyer is going to then purchase the house. But the transaction is going to be between the new buyer and the relocation company. The employee is free and clear. The employee doesn't have to, is not out of pocket for anything in those transactions. But the thing that's so interesting and what I think the agencies have to look at in the future analysis is that a buyer value transaction and an amended sale transaction are far less expensive than direct reimbursement plus gross up.
And people may not realize that because it's not always being done in the same sides of the house. You've got finance, you've got procurement.
They just don't realize it. And for example, in a $300,000 house, you can on buyer value option, an agency would save $12,000. On an amended value transaction, they would save $8,000.
In tough budget times, that's mm-hmm. actually it's, pretty good
and,
value.
And one of the recommendations that came out of the last big review, which was in 2004-05 of the Government Relocation Advisory Board work, was relocation contract should be your first option. Buyer value option should be the type of home sale transaction that mm-hmm. you strive for.
Interesting. So, but that doesn't seem to be the direction necessarily that we've gone.
No.
So, and probably it depends by agency because
it
there
does.
Is no.
There are some agencies.
Wide.
I mean, it's a best practice. Those
mm-hmm.
agencies that are using their relocation contracts are insisting that they do BVO transactions are finding their costs are contained.
And do you find that people in federal agencies are trained in how to manage these relocation programs? Or you mentioned they're going to the outside looking for some help, but is that part of the issue is that there aren't folks in the agencies who necessarily, it's not like Peggy, you mentioned, when you were in the private sector, they had an actual travel and relocation office mm-hmm. with people really focusing on this. And
The larger agencies, primarily the big law enforcement agencies, do have mm-hmm. very knowledgeable staffs, and they do a lot of their counseling in-house
right.
because, the employee, as I said before, has signed on the dotted line. They have to move, and the agency has to be supportive of that employee. Mm-hmm. The rest of the agencies, a lot of the staff has retired. The new staff coming in, you know, training and development budgets have been cut dramatically. And so they don't get to attend. The government tracked at the ERC conventions, which would be a fabulous source for training.
Right, right. And that's a problem across the board, not just for relocation, unfortunately. So, and now does private sector, do businesses do this the same way? Are there set types of programs they use? Or again, it's just sort of what makes business sense for them? And
it would be contained, Jenny, in how they would develop their policy. But I would tell you the predominant trend when BVO became an option, that is really still where the lion's share of any home sales kind of programs would be in the private sector, would be in the BVO space. So again, it's not as expensive to the organization as direct reimbursement and or guaranteed home buyout. So this was a way that the employee had some accountability in helping to sell their home, someone on their own, et cetera, and then the company would help, the employer and its outsource partner would help facilitate the transaction.
Right, that makes sense. And I ask a little bit about training and in-house, and it seems that that's very much done and prioritized, or maybe not as much as it could be.
Well, I think, you know, many companies went to an outsource model on their mobility needs probably 10 to 15 years ago. There still are a few companies that in the private sector that we would say are in-house programs, which is that they have a staff and they manage it on their own. And those work well within their corporate culture. I think what's interesting is as those people that run those programs retire, the question will be, whether or not their organization continues to fund that kind of department. But then you had a number of organizations, you know, again, back 10 or 15 years ago, that made the determination that being in-house was not an effective use of their resource and thus went to an outsource model. And there was varying degrees of the outsource. Some went all in, or all out, I should say, and some did more of a hybrid, and, you know, and it just depended. But I absolutely feel like the energy and the trajectory is going to continue to an outsource kind of model.
Going to somebody who has that really big, specific expertise in it. Because you can't always have expertise in everything in that.
Well, and it ties, Jenny, into back when I made my opening comments around this transformation that's underway in moving the mobility professional into more of a strategic advisor to a business unit and not as focused on the transaction of, oh, I got to move Jenny from, you know, Omaha, Nebraska to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, let's let an outsource company focus on that. Let's focus on how I need to set up my mobility structure and platform so it's going to help achieve a business objective. Totally different skill set, totally different dynamic than just a few years ago.
And really a different goal.
Totally different goal.
I mean, that's that's a very different thing. And I think, you know, again, as I said, having gone through a bunch of moves, it's a big deal for families and for the employees that go through it. It's not just this, I feel like moving. I mean, I'm sure maybe some people think, you know, hey, big adventure. But it was certainly as it's a major life event, as we say. And so I think I like the idea of making it this goal, making it beneficial for the employee, too. And I think that's something that, you know, I think some places it's done well in the government and viewed that way. Some places, you know, it's more of an ad hoc procurement issue and people are signing a piece of paper and saying, move from point A to point B. Is that relatively what you see? Is that, you know, that procurement side, it's really just folks signing a contract.
We have seen the full spectrum right now in the federal government, where you have agencies that are absolutely refusing to pay for any moves. So they're doing hire local only policies.
That's interesting. And so is it, do they put that out there first? Is it that's, you know, we're not going to pay?
They have a job opening for a certain type of scientist who would normally have rotated maybe from headquarters to a regional office. Now the regional office in, say, St. Louis, is they're trying first to hire locally so that they don't have to pay any relocation costs. What they're finding, and this is just real ad hoc research, but it does need to be studied in depth, is that they're limiting their talent pool. They're lengthening their process of hiring altogether, and they may still need to go back and hire nationally, advertise nationally, and relocate somebody. So, you know, they could have wasted 6-9 months. The hiring process is still not very speedy in the federal government, at least not that I've observed from my work.
And so when you add that on top of, you know, taking time, wasting time in some respects of doing that, well, and to me, it goes against that idea of you want the right people in the right place at the right time, you know. And so if you're making your moves based off budget versus...
You know, it's interesting, Jenny, one of the thoughts that I'll add, because, you know, cost certainly does still play in the private sector. I mean, and they're not immune to that. But I've challenged folks when they're looking at this and going and talking to their business leaders to change the dialogue from being a cost discussion to either what's the experience we want the employee to have, and let's agree on what that goal is, because you can dial up or dial down your costs. You know, many of us fly quite a bit, and, you know, you can pay for the economy plus or you can pay for economy. And whether or not you want to have a business class, those are all different experiences. Don't focus on the dollars. And if you can get a business unit manager to look at what's the experience and tie that to productivity, you know, if I'm going to allow, you know, offer somebody the opportunity to move, and, you know, they're going to have to carry the burden of a lot of the move activity on their own, they're not going to be as productive, you know, in their job. So let's talk about experience, and then let's look at what the cost might be. But when you start at cost, there's usually only one direction to go in that dialogue, and it's always down. And I'll end on this last part with this too, which I've said, if you have a very cost conscious business unit, and we all have been around them and we know about them, you know, I use the analogy from The Towering Inferno, then cut floors, not corners. And so the translation there is move less people, but don't have everybody you move have a worse experience. Right. You know, focus on the experience. And if you are budget constrained, then just move less people or hire less people and come back and look at that when you're in a different position.
Right. And that's an interesting idea of what is the experience you want the employee to have, which is an interesting question that, you know, across the board, whether it's public or private, not everybody asks that question. So I think it's one to stop. And we're going to take a break here, our final break for the show. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion. We're going to stop and hear a word from our sponsor now. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show on relocation in both the federal government and really contrasting it and comparing in some ways to the private sector. And one of the things we've been talking about, we just left with that question of, you know, the difference that some companies ask of what's the employee's, you know, experience being moved. I think we've also talked a little bit about what's the agency's experience in terms of how they do this. Are there best practices? One thing we mentioned earlier was the GRAB report, this report that came out 10 years ago, Government Relocation Advisory Board that GSA convened, I guess, and they had a whole bunch of best practices, recommendations. What happened with those?
They had 151 recommendations.
That's
quite
a few.
They were in two bundles, legislative and regulatory. The regulatory changes actually went into effect in August of 2011.
So recently.
Yes, recently. And what they did was to scale back some of the allowances and entitlements. They cut back time and temporary quarters. And again, as Peggy was saying, you know, very much focused on cost. The legislative changes, however, that were proposed that have never gone anywhere were focused much more broadly on the concepts that Peggy's been bringing up about integrating relocation into government business planning and human capital strategy. The GRAB talked a lot about that and how it would be so much more valuable to the operations of the federal agencies if they could adopt that type of concept and begin to change their organizational structures to make that happen. The first and best GRAB recommendation that came out was use your relocation contracts. They will save you money. And what has happened since the sequestration and all the budgets cuts is that agencies have moved totally away from using the relocation contracts, have gone to the direct reimbursement program, employee self-funded moves, hire local policies, all of those which are bad practices.
Kind of going that down direction, the piggy
bank. At the moment, the program is unfocused. It's all over the place. And it needs for someone to, you know, OPM and OMB and GSA to sit down together with the appropriate members of Congress and say, okay, what are we doing? Where are we going? We've got this retirement, you know, tsunami, for lack of a better word, right, that I've read in lots of publications coming. We have these mid-level employees who are still underwater from their houses and have not been able to move. So their careers have been damaged, their career paths, and some of them are in tatters.
Right.
We are competing with the private sector for talent.
Because there is a war on talent.
And should recognize that we really and truly do need the best and brightest in government.
Right. So. Yeah. So it sounds like, even though it's been nearly 10 years since this report came out, a lot of these recommendations are still valid today, and they sort of identified those problems 10 years ago. And obviously, sequester has put a damper on a lot of things, not just relocation. There's been a whole host of issues coming from that, but it's certainly something we can do. And now, Peggy, I heard you talk about, or Linda, I think you mentioned that Worldwide ERC has trainings and things like that. So there are resources as well, even despite not having some of these programs in place, that I think some federal agencies do send folks to your trainings, or at least they're aware of them.
They are, Jenny, and they and I think Linda alluded to this earlier. Unfortunately, with the training cuts that the federal government has made, we've seen a decline in their ability to be able to attend our events. We usually do a pretty strong track for them at our U.S. domestic event, which is upcoming in the first week of May in Orlando. And we understand that, you know, those are the dynamics that come into play. We do offer, it's a double-edged sword, too, because we also offer for our first-time corporate HR attendees free registration, which is the ability to keep them in. But yet the government can't take advantage of that, you know. So it's like, my goodness, you know, we're trying to do as much as you possibly can and whatnot. But yeah, there are a few things that we have out there for sure.
Okay. Yeah. And is it something that, is this just for when you look at training? Because one of the things I've heard from federal managers specifically is that they themselves as individuals don't understand how the program works. It's not just people in the agencies are not having the programs there. There's not, as an individual that might be moving, you don't understand that. Are there resources out there for individuals to, if you're managing your own move, how do you know about what BVO is, or, you know, so you can go back to your agency and say, can I have this? Is any of that out there for individuals?
Well, there are employee handbooks for the relocation contracts and employees, and there's websites, you know, and it's on the agency intranets. The GSA Employee Relocation Resource Center has a lot of very good materials that they've developed for employees to understand and learn, and also for the managers and the administrators of the programs. But yet, you know, a GSA is capable of doing some industry days locally, but they're not going off and doing any conferences on their own.
Right.
especially not in recent environments.
Absolutely. So, and because Peggy, I take that most of your training is probably more agency focused or for the actual programmatic people who are doing this.
It is. And that's true across, you know, any part mm-hmm. of the sector. Our service providers that would support somebody in the private sector, we'd call it a lump sum program, have models that go to support the actual individual. We tend to focus more on the B2B, if you will, business mm-hmm. to business, and the consumer then would be the actual person that's moving. We don't touch as much of that. We really leave that to our member segments to do that.
Right. Yeah. And that's the companies who are handling this. They're the ones that walk people through the entire process because, you know, and so that's something that we talk to, you know, when I've talked to groups, various management associations about how can they get involved mm-hmm. in helping bring some of this information to their mm-hmm. members. Because, again, it's we've talked a lot about in these groups, empowering employees to help themselves.
Right.
And I think that's part of the deal is despite you could have the best program in the world, but you still as a person going through it need to be understanding of what the challenges and barriers are.
The associations need to write about it in their newsletters
mm-hmm.
and,
right.
and put it on their internet and have places where employees can ask questions.
Absolutely. And that's
to make intelligent decisions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think I'll put a plug there. I think we're going to be picking up some relocation info in fedmanager.com. So I think Linda's going to be helping us bring some of that to light eventually here. So because it is something that people don't talk about all the time. And it's not unless you've mm-hmm. been through relocation or unless you're all of a sudden told you're moving, nobody talks about it. It's not their dinner table conversation. So I think that's a good way to get it out there. One thing I did, we've got a few minutes before we wrap up, and something we haven't talked about that I think is a best practice from Grab and I wanted to highlight is data. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things mm-hmm. we talk about all the time in the government now is big data, open data. Mm-hmm. Are people keeping data on relocations? Is there a, you know, I know Grab said something about a data warehouse.
Right.
And I don't think that's been done.
It has not been done. GSA had started out to contract and to create the data warehouse and the elements, there were pages and pages of information that everybody thought was the best information. Great idea, get a data mm-hmm. warehouse because we don't have the data to make decisions, but the money for the data warehouse fell through.
Right.
And right now there are no plans that I'm aware of. And recently I asked someone, is that going to be mm-hmm. revived? And the answer was no.
Yeah, and I think it's another interesting dynamic and difference between the private and the public sector, and that simply is that you're going to hear more and more words around talent analytics. And so, you know, organizations are recognizing that big data or data, you know, data is only bits and bytes. It's the business intelligence you draw from the data that's critical. And when I talked earlier about this corporate talent system, that's what that's attempting to achieve. They're okay. saying we're going to do this. And, you know, I think it is going to be the future. And, you know, one of the things I think, Linda, that's going to be really interesting, too, here is, you know, you talked about a retirement tsunami. You talked about, you know, the other dynamics that are in play for the government agencies. I'll tell you, the private sector is struggling with the same things. It's a shrinking talent pool. You're going to yep. have millennials that come into the workforce who, by the way, only expect to stay at an employer 18 to 24 months. So companies right now,
model.
It's a huge different model. So mm-hmm. companies in the private sector right now are grappling with these things. And it could very well be that kind of war for talent between the two sectors becomes a springboard that, you know, enables some action over on the public sector side, because you are going to have the retirement tsunami. We are as well, right? And how are they going to address that?
And maybe this is the positive way. Sometimes you need something like that to
right.
create change. So, well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. And I want to thank both of you for coming and talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Delightful.
Great to chat with you. And we'll definitely take this up again. Thank you for joining us. And Fed Talk is brought to you by the law firm of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.